Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, here for another episode with you as we have a great guest lined up. I only needed a handful of questions for this guest. He was amazing to share so many stories, great information, great tips, great advice. It just comes out of our guest today. His name is Don Burke. He's from Virginia. And one of the things we're going to talk about with him is how he takes this massively large, long road trip. He has FSHD. And he goes on a 93 total day road trip, 28,340 miles in an EV, electric vehicle, talks about that. He had, of course, hazards along the way that he talks about. One question I failed to mention is what kind of snacks did he have? I mean, we all talk about snacks on road trips, so I apologize for not having that question. And he talked about the proper hotels to get. Interesting advice, what to say to make sure that the hotel room you get, like if it's going to be handicap advice, how to make sure that that is locked in for you. And so many other things, his FSHD emergency kit in his car. So he can do this. And moments when things maybe didn't go so great and he got himself out of it, right? Into those situations. He describes himself as a risk taker. How many of us are risk takers, right? Not too many now. Maybe we were. And he's kind of taking that feeling, being a risk taker, and this is what he's doing. He talks about breaking through this preconceived notion that isn't true about cars, or Iocon almost adapted what he said there as you listen to the interview to everything else about us and how we live our day. And lastly, kind of the big takeaway was just live where you are. Couldn't do those things before, or you didn't do those things, or now you can't, or whatever the can'ts and I could have live, but be where you are, right? Live where you are, live in the now. What can you do? Plan accordingly, avoid the hazards the best you can. And he definitely brings a lot of that to this conversation. I'm really excited for you to listen to him. And I think this is a fun episode. Don't forget though, you can also, as we plug away, visit FSHDSociety.org. You can find everything going on with FSHD Society. The calendar is like the place for me to kind of look and see what's going on. You know, there's a lot of different groups out there you can join, you can be a part of. We really want you to do that. So many things coming up as the holidays approach. This is November already. Oh my goodness, I can't believe it. But there's great chapter meetings coming up. There is... oh my goodness, Feeling Fit with FSHDs around the corner, Parents Roundtable coming up this month. Ontario Chapter Brunch Meeting on the 24th. That's awesome. That sounds good. And I go for that. So many things you can find on the calendar, as well as the Young Adults Dash. They're going to talk about relationships on the 18th. So tune in to all those amazing things that FSHD Society brings. And lastly, with this interview with Don, you know, he was from the original kind of roots of the FSHD Society. They're chronicling that right now with his help, back with Carol and Dan Perez, and talked about in July of 1991 how they started to meet and do things and make it official. And it's incredible to think where this has started. This man is, you know, was a part of it from the start. Being on the show, it was really an honor for him to take some time and just share his life and share his experiences. It's a blast. So FSHD Straight Talk, tell your friends about this show. Please review, rate, share, all that stuff. Find us on Spotify, YouTube, and so on. And I'll leave you to now the episode with our featured guest today from Virginia, Don Burke. Hi, everyone. I've got some exciting news for you from the FSHD community. If you've ever felt the unpredictability of FSHD or wish there was more accurate research and information out there, and I know you have, then listen up. I'm thrilled to tell you about Better Life FSHD, a groundbreaking new research platform from the FSHD Society that's changing the game for those of us living with FSHD. Better Life is your one-stop hub for tracking symptoms, accessing personalized resources like articles and videos relevant to you. And the best part, as you take surveys and track your symptoms, you provide FSHD researchers with better data to understand this complex, understudied disease. And a better understanding can lead to faster treatments, something everyone, every one of us can get behind. So head over to betterlifefshd.org and join the study. It only takes a minute to get signed up. Together, we can change the future for everyone affected by FSHD. I've done this. It's a simple process. I challenge you to do the same. Again, that's betterlifefshd.org. Now let's get back to the show. So today our featured guest is Don Burke. He joined us today. He has FSHD like so many of us do, but he has this, what I think is going to be an amazing story to share with all of us. He is a traveler, done road trips. And I don't know about you, but I've done a lot of road trips for baseball travel and this and that. And I don't mind them. I think they're kind of fun. I think there's this, you know, cool experience that's all about it. The things that you get to see. I think we can all kind of, you know, relate to that. And the stories I think Don's going to share with that, as well as early days of FSHD Society, driving an EV car within this road trip. Oh my gosh, there's just so much to unpack. So we welcome him today. Hey, Don, how are you doing?
Hey, great to see you today.
So start with kind of a little bit of yourself, like where are you recording the episode from? You know, where do you live and your FSHD story?
Yeah, I'm back at home. I'm in Alexandria, Virginia, where I've really lived the majority of my adult life. I'm about to head out on another road trip starting Thursday, it looks like.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Wow. So okay. That's just a short one back to Minnesota. So just a couple of thousand miles. I think just to maybe start a little bit with my background, as I said, I've lived here in Alexandria, but I grew up in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. That is kind of my whole DNA is based out of Minnesota. So all of like the Minnesota nights you hear about all the time, that's kind of what I grew up in.
Yeah.
And so that formed all of who I am. Like so many of us, FSHD is quite prevalent in my family. Mm. My grandmother had it and has passed it down through the generations. Thankfully in my family, she was correctly diagnosed like in the 70s, the stories I've heard about misdiagnosis throughout the years is just such a sad tale for FSHD. In some ways, our family is fortunate that we knew what we had and it was a correct knowing all along. So that was, I think, at least we could reckon with that as we came along the way. For me, I think I was formally diagnosed with the old shoulder blade trick around the age of 17.
Okay.
But in reality, as I look back now, I had FSHD showing symptoms of FSHD even at age 7 and 8. Mm. I remember my grandma, forcing me to use string with a weight on it to try to make my lips work better. That was something we were asked to do.
Yeah.
And looking back on it now, that was clearly all FSH related. That was already my facial muscles weakening and not really able to chew correctly or to say M's and P's and B's correctly. And these were efforts to try to fix all of that. And then for me, the really seminal moment in my early 8 era was when I had to do the president's physical fitness test in middle school and high school. And, there you are sitting in front of all your other guy classmates and you can't do a pull up, you can't do a sit up. And it was just such a, emotionally powerful moment, not in a good way.
Yeah.
That was really kind of my wake up call to FSH more than anything else. Then I had scapular fixation when I was like 19 in 20 okay. or 21, somewhere in there. So 1989 and 90, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. I had them on both shoulders. That was a really big thing for me. And right in that same period of time was really the, that was when the FSHD Society formed. And, you know, I was really fortunate to be part of that formation. We had, you know, it's hard to remember now, but there was a day when literally, unless you knew, unless someone else in your family had it, you knew no one else with FSHD.
Mm-hmm. True.
And that's what it was like before the society. Mm-hmm. And this researcher came along in like the mid 80s somewhere and started asking for blood from those of us that had FSH. Mm-hmm. And somehow or another, Stephen Jacobson found his way to our family and probably through my aunt. Mm-hmm. And we all gave blood. And like so many of the other families, we began begging him to put us in touch with the other families that he had been getting blood from.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or another, one way or another, he found a way to make that work and stay within the rules. And so we all began to sort of start, you know, just meeting each other and working together. And Carol and Dan decided to try to begin to put together these support groups around the country. And we got one started in the Mid-Atlantic with Karen Johnson and one out of Alabama with Ann Biggs Williams, who that was my foray into it because I was in college at the time down in Florida. And we all began meeting. And then I worked up here. So she put me in touch with Karen. And we all had these meetings, and then Dan and Carol decided we really need to make this a formal thing and mm-hmm. really try to put that together. And I found the letter of incorporation today for the
wow.
FSHD Society. It was July 1991.
Wow.
And then in July 92, at least that's what I have from my notes, was our foundational meeting out in California where about 15 of us all flew in from all over the country, Dan and Carol with the lawyer, and we're like, yep, let's make this a thing.
Make it a thing. The birth.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, and then it's just progressed for me throughout the years. I don't know, you know, I know everyone goes through a different journey. For me, it's been kind of a slow progression with these waves of acceleration. So, you know, so for me, my life has changed over the years. I've always kind of been a risk taker. So I used to ski and jump off cliffs and race cars and do demolition derbies and things like that.
Holy cow.
And then over the years, of course, I've just had to kind of give that stuff up in various ways. You know, I would adapt for a while, then I'd have to mm-hmm. give it up and move along. All along that way. So, and then just in terms of my history, I also started wearing my bilateral AFOs starting around 2008.
Okay.
So that's already been 14 years.
Wow.
With the AFOs. Pretty crazy. Hard to imagine. I can't imagine life without them at this point. First thing I do in the morning is I put those on as soon as I'm out of the shower.
Wow.
And then I think for a lot of people with FSH, you can remember the first time you fell and you can't get up. I don't know. For me, that was January of 2017. That was a really difficult day for me. It was I fell in a very odd place. I was alone. I was in an isolated place. And I laid there on the ground for quite a while till someone came by to help me up. And that was the first time I couldn't get up. And that was a really big change in my life from that point forward.
What did you do, or what did you change when you hit that point when you fell, needed the assistance to get up? I'm sure that was very emotional and scary, that rolled into one. So then
it's a real gut punch. I think, well, from that time out, I knew that I really had to make sure that I had some sort of line to help at any given time. Because, you know, I literally laid on that parking lot just waiting for someone to come by and find me laying there.
Wow.
So it was a big change in terms of how I went about life, because I knew that I could no longer just depend solely on myself to recover if something happened. So that was, it wasn't that I stopped doing anything that day. It was more like, oh, now I need to wrap myself in another layer of protection. Because if I go down, I'm going to need help.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's scary, though, nonetheless.
And then to wrap, it still freaks me out thinking about it. And then to wrap up sort of the history section, I've been privileged to be in, I think, 3 clinical trials now. I was in the original myostatin 29 trial. I was in the MOVE trial.
Okay.
And I just finished up the Fulcrum trial, the losmapimod trial. So I've got a fair bit of experience on the trial front. If anyone out there has questions about clinical trials, feel free to reach out to me. I'm certainly happy to talk about that. I love the clinical trials. It's a really interesting experience, and I encourage everyone to get involved in that. And so I think that's kind of where I'll wrap up the history. You know, I am still able to walk, not very well, but I am able to walk. And that was a big impetus for me pushing to retire as soon as I could, so I could travel while I could still walk. So let me sort of hand it back over to you for a moment.
No, that's great. I mean, because you mentioned a couple of, you know, key things in there, like the term risk taker. Is that you obviously jumping off cliffs? I mean, there's no way I'm doing that. That is wild, Don. And those are, of course, extreme, but risk taker that you are, it seems like then what was your next risk taking move then? Is it these road trips that kind of stretched the limits a little bit?
Yeah. Well, throughout my life, I've always loved the synergy between man and machine, because the machine can pick up where my body fails me. So I think sort of a lineage of all of that is the different way that I use machines throughout my life. So in the early times, it was really about racing, you know, getting in racing go-karts or demolition derby vehicles or the different kinds of things like that. Then it was sailing and I lived on a motorboat for a while, so I could use those machines to still be on the water and still, you know, do interesting physical things. And then it sort of became more and more and more about, you know, about driving and going place with the vehicle, because that was something I could still do. I could no longer hike the way I like to hike. I could no longer ski. I could no longer water ski, those kind of things. So I just transitioned more into really interesting road trips that I've done over my life. And I still love that. You can get to some really remote places on roads that leave you really realizing how vast our planet is.
Yeah,
you often are, you're like,
yeah, like, where are you?
To build a road here.
Did you ever get that moment where you're like, uh-oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't have went this way, or I'm in a spot where this might be tough to get out of if something bad happens?
Yeah, I've had a couple of those. In May of 23, I crashed my car in very rural Georgia. I was down near the border of Florida in southwestern Georgia. And I came around a corner, and I let the car do something I shouldn't have let it did. And I hit a culvert. And it took my car out. It hit, the airbags went off. The car was dead. It was a brick. And I was in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
I didn't have any cell phone coverage. I didn't have anything.
Oh my gosh.
And so it really leaves you like, it leaves you realizing, you know, things can go bad really, really fast, and you need to have some solutions in place. So in this case, I was still on a public road, and so a farmer happened to come by, and he stopped and he gave me some water. His phone had a connection, so he helped call a tow truck,
Wow.
and he stopped back in on me a couple times throughout the day, but it took me the entire day to get back to civilization,
Oh
you
my
know,
God.
and that de it depended on the help of human beings to make that happen. So a good Samaritan stopped to help and make sure I was okay. The tow truck drivers, I can't get up into a rollback anymore, obviously. So they literally had to get under my butt and like hoist me up into the cab of the truck. And they did that. They didn't complain. They didn't like grouse.
Just
They
did it.
just did. And then they got me back to town, and I got a hotel, and then I was able to kind of reconstruct from there and get a rental car and get my car to a place that we could find out if it was going to be fixable or not. And then I sort of reset and started again. So yeah, but
Wow.
you know, I think all of those things have all continued to build on my strategies when I do these big trips and I do these travels. So one of the big things I do now is I have location enabling for my wife, so she's always able to see where I am on Google Maps. And we also have a I also have a chat group of fellow road warriors, all friends.
Cool.
And so we can stay in touch at any given time. And if I'm going to go somewhere really remote, I'll chat them and I'll say, "Hey, I'm about to go into the middle of nowhere for a few hours. You know, please check me out on." We also use a tracking app so that we can see where each other are. And
Nice.
I'll just say, "Follow me on that and make sure that, you know, I'll ping you when I'm back in cell phone coverage." And they follow along, and they're, you know, they're ready to
They're
jump
there.
into if anything weird happens.
That's
So that's sort
awesome.
of a core of like how I create a kind of a community around me when I travel, so that I can get help. I actually got help from one of the FSHD Society's employees a couple of years ago when I had a flat tire just outside of Denver. And I ended up staying in the car overnight waiting for to get some help. And when the truck came, I asked them if they'd come out and pick me up so I could just come back in their car rather than in the rollback. So it's
Nice.
about building relationships and having, you know, knowing people and like so much else in life, being willing to ask for help when you need help. So much of it, so many of us have trouble asking for help. And it's something I've really worked to get over. And I just, if I need help, I ask. People are almost always willing to help if you ask them for help.
Yeah, don't deny them the opportunity to help you because somebody
Right,
told them more,
exactly.
right?
Yeah,
They might
exactly.
want to actually help you. Like, don't take that from them. It's like, oh yeah, that's a good perspective. So
Yeah.
with these trips, there's, you know, you shared with me, you know, some interesting stats, like you had this long road trip and you had 93 total days on the road, 28,340 miles traveled. And now keep in
That's
mind, if we haven't really, you know, set the stage here for these trips, or this is with an electric vehicle, right? I mean, this is
yeah.
not gas powered, folks. This is electric vehicles. So for all those people that have had apprehensions or questions, I know I'm one of them, of how far can I really go with an electric vehicle? Can I really go that far? Can I really go cross country? You're living proof, Don, that this is possible.
Yep. Yeah, I drive a Tesla Model X. It's really good for my disability. It's got great doors for me to get in and out of. It's got air suspension that I can raise and lower the car, and it's really easy to slide in and out. The Falcon Wing doors are great for me to put my scooter in and out, or to to get in and out where I keep a refrigerator for food.
Oh, nice.
So it's just really easy access. So it's one of the big reasons I have that car. That particular EV can go, my particular EV can go about 330 miles on from top to bottom in okay. ideal conditions. Normally, on most normal days, I drive 2 to 3 hours between stops. I can mm-hmm. drive longer, but that's kind of more of an optimized way, is three-ish hours or so, 180 miles and stop. And there are chargers everywhere. You don't even need to know where they are. The car, if you don't travel like I do and you're just trying to get from point A to point B, yeah. you just tell the car where you want to go and it will tell you where to stop, how long that stop is going to take. And you know, it'll just route you right through to where you want to go. It's like super simple. Of course, wow. I don't do it that way. As a risk taker, I'm looking for the hard routes. I get off the interstates. I'm like, where are the fewest chargers? That's where yeah. I want to go.
Oh my gosh.
And I want to go to all the chargers. So I have this stupid little hobby with other friends where we collect superchargers. So I go to all of them. I try to get to every single supercharger.
Wow.
But on average, I typically spend about 10 to 20 minutes charging per stop, mm-hmm. which is enough time to go in and go to the bathroom, get a little food. The car yeah. is almost always ready before I am. You know, there are times where that's not true, but most of the time it's 10 to 20 minutes. I usually try to stay at a hotel that has charging so I can start the day fully charged if that's possible. Of course, a handicap room is more important for me. So first order of business is to find a Hilton hotel with a handicap room. And then look for one that has EV charging that goes with that. But,
what's the cost of the charging? I'm sure someone's thinking this right now. Like, what is that
cost? Well, I'm a little bit of an unusual situation. For me, it's free because I got a perk with my car. For 6 years, I get free nice. Supercharging. So okay. that 93-day trip, I would have used about, well, my app says I've saved $6,800 in gasoline cost this year.
Wow.
Just because I have free supercharging. But yeah. generally speaking, on the road, it's a little more expensive than charging at home, but it's still cheaper than gas. Mm. It's like driving a car that gets like, you know, 60 or 70 miles a gallon.
You know, okay.
You know, it would cost about, you know, $12 to fill up, I think, and wow. go 340 miles.
Damn, that's great. that is awesome.
Well, yeah, every supercharger is a little different, so I can't say unequivocally, and every EV is different.
Yeah.
But they are definitely cheaper than gasoline. And if you can charge at home, they're a lot cheaper than gasoline.
Yeah, and a lot. Because yeah. I have an acquaintance, I guess, kind of a friend, that has a Tesla also. And she has said, it's not like driving a car, it's like driving technology.
Yeah, well, it is that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like Tesla has basically no buttons in the car at all. There are a couple of buttons on the steering wheel
yeah.
and then everything, the rest of it's controlled through like an iPad.
Wow.
So through the screen in the center. Yeah. It's great. It's always connected. It's always, it's always trying to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. It'll try to avoid traffic accidents. If it has any ability to help you avoid an accident, it'll do that. It won't let you run out of electricity.
Yeah.
And it will route you, as I mentioned. It's got YouTube on it. It's got Netflix on it. It's got all these games you can play while you're charging if you want.
Yeah. That's amazing.
The kids can play games in the back while you're driving. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. They're amazing cars.
That is amazing.
Super reliable, super cheap to drive. Thing that people don't realize is, you know, I just got in and went, right? I didn't have to think about a 30,000 mile road trip. I just got in and went for the most. I put new tires on.
Yeah.
I just got in and went. There's no oil changes. There's no emissions. There are no air filters. There's no, well, there's an air filter, but there, you know,
yeah, maybe
there's
for the
none of
cabin,
the
but not
other.
for the motor, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And so you just, they just go and go and go. You have no maintenance. You don't have to, like, you don't even rotate the tires. You just,
Wow.
You don't even use the
That's
brakes
incredible.
because you use regenerative braking to slow down. So the brakes last forever.
Man.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so 93 days.
Eye-opening. Yeah. So when, what part of the year did you go? Is it summertime
May,
or?
Yeah, May, June, July, and August. Yeah, so end of May,
Smart.
June, July, into August. May 9th to August 9th.
And did you hit every state? Like, what was the goal of that 93-day
Well,
trip?
my goal was to really get to the Pacific Northwest. That was kind of the primary goal. I hadn't really traveled the Pacific Northwest in my electric vehicles yet. So that was a big hole in my map of travel.
Okay.
And I'd never, it's been probably 2 decades since I'd been to Washington State. And I wanted to get back to Washington State, see a bunch of friends and things like that. So that was roughly it. But I didn't have much of a plan other than I knew I want, we knew we had a concert in New York we were going to on day one.
Okay.
I knew I wanted to be at the FS, I knew I was going to be at the FSHD Society meeting in Denver.
Denver. Okay.
And then I had my niece got married at the end of July back in Minnesota. So I had those three anchor points. Everything else was optional. Oh, and I had a Tesla event as well in South Dakota. So
that's cool. Wow.
So those were my anchor points. Everything else was optional within that. So I ended up going to 38 states and 4 Canadian provinces, 6 times across the Rockies, 3 times each way.
Wow.
And
that's incredible.
My wife and I had been trying to get to this wonderful national park called Mesa Verde. If no one's ever heard, if you haven't heard of it, look it up. It's just an amazing place. It's these ancestral homes that are built in the cliffs of the river gorges there. It's in the far southwest corner of Colorado, right on the border of the, right on the Four Corners border, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado and Arizona. And it's just an absolutely stunning place. So we got there as well. We went back through Death Valley. I'd been wanting to get back to Death Valley since my first visit there. And yeah, so we just roamed around. My niece, another niece came out and spent some time with me in Washington State. We spent a wonderful couple of days in the Cascades there. We did some whale watching up out of Bellingham. We went up to Whistler. She had never been to Canada, so I took her up to Whistler in north of Vancouver for a day trip. That was interesting, crossing a border in Washington State. Me, an old white guy, with a young lady with Virginia plates.
Yeah.
Her passport was from Minnesota.
Oh, geez. Oh, man.
That guard was like, "Who are you and what are you doing?"
That's a little suspicious. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was fine. We got through and it was all good. We had a wonderful day up at Whistler. But yeah, and then just some of the parks in the Rockies are just absolutely spectacular. Just the roads are just amazing. For me, I love being west of the Mississippi. It's just the big open spaces, the roads are just, you know, you look out these roads, just go to the vanishing point and you don't see anything else but a road going straight to the vanishing point. Is just, I love it. It never gets old to me.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, do you ever get tired of being, you hear that from people, I'm tired of being in the car and this and this, and it doesn't seem like that's a problem for you though.
Well, you know, it takes a certain mindset and it takes a while to get into it. You know, the first week or so you're like, oh, you know, like, what's going on here? What am I doing this for?
Yeah.
But then you kind of get into a rhythm and it sort of becomes your daily norm. And it's just kind of what you do every day. You get up, you drive a few hundred miles, you see something, you do something, you find another hotel. That's just kind of what you do. But you have, it takes a certain mindset. You're wearing the same clothes all the time. You know, you're packing up every night, every morning, every day is a different hotel. You're like, what am I going to find today? Like, they said it was a handicap room. What is it really?
Is it really? Be? Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Which is why I've settled on Hilton, because they have proved to have the most reliable handicapped rooms in my experience, as a road warrior. I was trying everything under the sun, and I just
they
found
the
that they
consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that, I request, I always look for a roll-in shower at a Hilton hotel. Those are the most reliable of anything. So, and roll-in showers are just far easier for me than getting in and out of a tub.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So the leg I always have things. A roll-in shower, but of course I have my emergency kit with me too. So I have an entire emergency kit. I should just start labeling it my FSHD emergency kit. That I have in the car. It's a whole range of things that I carry with me, so that if I find myself in a place with a room that's really not very good, I can still make do. And yeah, I just have a whole range of that stuff that helps make it easier for me on the road. Finishing up that thought, it does have a tendency to get old. So every now and again, I make sure to stop for a few days. You know, I stop for 2 or 3 days and I just kind of hang out around that area, you know, but this had three pretty big breaks. I was in South Dakota for the Tesla event for 4 days.
Okay.
And I was in the Washington State, Seattle area for the better part of a week, seeing friends. And then the conference was the better part of a week. And then it was a week in Minnesota for my niece's wedding. So those created little breaks along the way. I was still living in hotels, but just staying in one room for 4 or 5 nights is like a little honeymoon all of its own.
And do you plan the route though at all? Like when you did this, or you just kind of just go a direction and see ya?
I generally do it segments. So like I would have a notional idea of how I was going to get from Alexandria, Virginia to the event in South Dakota.
Okay.
I have a rough idea of the plan I want to take, but then I vary it based on whether new superchargers open, you know, whether I see something interesting I want to go visit. And so I had a notional idea how I would break the trip up, but I never locked myself in, because interesting things happen and I just want to go with it. So I never really reserve the hotels ahead of time. I'm just reserving. I usually drive until about, you know, around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll say, hey, where do I think I'm going to stop tonight?
Yeah.
Then I'll pull out the app. I'll reserve a hotel.
Just like that.
Nice. Just like that. And then I'll stop by 7-ish or so at night, usually.
That sounds like a lot of freedom, sounds like, right?
Yeah, but you got to be willing. That's sort of the risky side, though, again, right? Because you got to be willing to accept that something weird might happen. I've gotten to towns where they should absolutely have had hotels.
Yeah.
And found no hotels available. maybe it's a graduation weekend or some big event, and you pull out the app and there are no rooms available at all.
Oh man.
And then you got to adapt. You have to just say, am I just going to sleep in the car tonight? Am I going to drive another few hours to the next big town? You know, what am I going to do? So, you certainly have to be willing to take the unexpected when that happens, because you haven't made the plans to have everything just be the way you expect. But I love that.
Yeah. I can feel your energy about it. I mean, even now as you talk about it, it feels like you can't wait to get going again. I know you say you're leaving Thursday. Granted, it's not as far. Going to Minnesota, sound, you know, back home, it seems. That's great. So as you drive by Wisconsin, make sure you wave. That's where I'm at.
Oh, I'll probably drive actually right through Wisconsin.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Probably going to start by going up into, I never go anywhere in a straight line.
Okay.
So I'm probably going to start by going up into far north New York State, over to Buffalo, down along the Great Lakes. So across, down along Lake Erie, probably. And then I think I'm going to swing up through Wisconsin, maybe up through Milwaukee.
Nice.
Up and then across, I think. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. But, right. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So advice you would give someone that wants to do a road trip, even if it's not something so extreme. It sounds like you're saying make sure you have some type of FSHD emergency kit. Maybe they want to plan a little more than maybe you've let on that you do, because maybe that's more of a mission trip to get to a place. But you know, elaborate then, like, what do you think is like the must for someone with FSHD if they're going to take these kind of trips?
Well, first of all, is to make sure you have a plan for your hotel rooms. And get those reserved. Make sure they're handicap rooms. I would even encourage once you make the reservation, I would encourage calling the hotel and asking them to hard block the room. So there's a term of art in the hotel industry called hard blocking. Yeah. It turns out when you reserve a hotel room, you're not reserving a specific hotel room.
Okay.
You're reserving a category of hotel rooms. And you can theoretically be changed from one room to another by the time you arrive.
Mm.
Some hotel chains are better than others, particularly with handicap rooms.
Yeah.
But I have had many occasions where I thought I reserved a handicap room, and I arrived and they did not have a handicap room for me.
Huh.
So the best way to ensure it is to use a direct reservation like the Hilton app or the Hilton website, not Priceline.
Yeah.
Although Priceline's getting better, I have experienced. And then calling the hotel saying, please hard block this room for me, or putting it in the comments when you reserve it, hard block this room, saying, I must have the roll-in shower. Please hard block this room.
And that's never failed.
It's never failed me as far as I can recall. I wouldn't want to, I wouldn't want to say to anyone that it's 100% guarantee.
Right.
But if you can get it hard, especially if you call someone and talk to the front desk staff and say, I need that room hard blocked. Can you do that? And they'll undoubtedly do it. And then you'll be in a good shape for that. So that's, I think, job number one, and then I would always ask for a roll-in shower. And then some of the things I carry with me, I have a couple of things here, but I think I have, one of the things I carry is
suction cup, grab bar.
And that, I actually carry three or four of them of different lengths. That usually works, but if the tub is tile, yes, a lot of times the suction cups won't fit over the tile. The tile is too small.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But that's why I carry different lengths, because if there are tiles, a different length grab bar, you can find one of your grab bars, you can find a way of angling it so that it fits just on a tile.
Nice.
So that's, I carry two or three of those. I carry these rubber mat, are these, they're called water shoes.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're rubber on the bottom, and you can just slip them on, because I don't know about anyone else, but for me, wet tile is like the most dangerous thing on the planet.
Yeah.
So I carry, so I have these water shoes that I can wear. I can just wear them right into the shower if I want.
Yeah.
Or I also carry rubber bath mats. I carry two of those. And I often will put those down outside the shower so that I can get from the shower over to the sink without walking on the slippery tile.
That's smart.
I always carry a grabber, you know, a hand grabber, so that I can have that in the room. And I always have my phone with me, of course. And then I have a variety of other things just for safety on the road. I carry a little step stool that can help me get up if I have to, like, again, if I had to get into a rollback or something, that would help me be able to get into the rollback. And I'm trying to think what else, a couple of other things that I can use for stepping if I need to. But those are some of the notional things. Let's see. I carry an extra pair of my AFOs with me.
Extras.
Makes sense. Because if I've, you know, a number of them have broken. I've been wearing them for 14 years, as I said. Every now and again, they'll break. And the thought of being halfway into a big, massive road trip and having an AFO break on me is just like, that sends shivers up my spine.
Oh, man.
So since I wear them on each foot, I need to have a full pair with me. So they just sit in my, in my frunk.
Yeah.
And I have a chair that I can use. So I have a nice collapsible chair that I can pull out at any given point if I need to. That works really well. It's solid. It has arms I can get up and out from. And I also carry a refrigerator in the car so I can have some decent food with me at any given time. And I always have extra food if I got stranded or something. I could live for probably a week out of the car if I had to.
Don, were you a Boy Scout?
Yeah, I think but I've done a lot of, you know, I've done a lot of adventure travel over the years, and you want to be self-sufficient, and you want to, but, you know, hotel rooms are, you know, I already told you a couple of stories about, you know, problems I had on the road, but the scariest moments for me are walking into a hotel room and not knowing what it is we're going to find. Right. So
how accessible really is it? Right.
Yeah. Day one of our trip, we went up to see Billy Joel at Times in Madison Square Garden. So we got a hotel right in Times Square.
Nice.
And it was a Hilton hotel. It was a Home 2. And it was, you know, a full roll-in shower handicap room. We walked into the room and the bed was 6 inches off the ground. And we're like, what is this? And we went down, we're like, complain. And like, all of our handicap rooms are like that. That's the new standard, is to have these ultra low. So that, you know, so that people in wheelchairs can ostensibly just slide across to the wheelchair.
So for transferring. Yeah.
Horrible. Yeah. So it's probably 18 inches at most.
High. Wow.
And, you know, I couldn't get out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, thankfully, my wife was with me for that part of the trip.
Oh my God.
You know, she could stand in front of me and I could just pull against her to get out of the bed. But that was a perfect example. It was like, it was a fully handicapped room, fully roll-in shower, yet they had this ridiculous bed that, you know,
can't get out of. Yeah.
Was useless to me.
Wow. So scary.
I think if I had been on my own at that point, I would have had to have been like this jerk customer demanding they find some way of putting the bed on elevators,
like,
or
risers
something.
Right.
That's just crazy. Was ridiculous.
I would have never thought of that. But I get that sense of being trapped in that bed. Like, just, you know, you can't boost yourself out of it. You're not going to sleep in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure what I would have did in that case. Thankfully, it was not an issue because my wife was with me. But and there were times in far remote Canada where there were no Hilton hotels, and I just had to go off of a couple of times. I literally just had to use Google Maps and type in hotel to find out what came up, and I literally had to call every hotel to try to find something. And a couple of times there were none with handicap rooms. And so out comes the emergency kit, and you do what you can do. Sometimes another trick you can do is almost every hotel, any modern hotel, even if you're not in a handicap room, they have public restrooms off the lobby somewhere that have handicap stalls.
True.
So I've done that before where I've had to not be in a handicap room for whatever reason. And I just go when I have to go to the bathroom, if I have to sit down, I go to the public bathroom.
Right. Right.
It's got grab bars. And it's got grab bars and it's just easier. Yeah. So there are a lot of ways you can sort of accommodate on that front.
Mm. Awesome. I mean, the stories you've shared, and I can only imagine the things that you've seen, the experiences you've had. One of my things that kind of stuck out to me, I guess, is when you said, adapt to it or you let it go. Right. So you do it and you adapt it and do it as long as you can, then you let it go. But it seems like when that happens for you, you don't necessarily, you let it go, but maybe you also replace it, right? You're a risk taker on these things. You replace it with this.
Yeah. I'm fortunate in that I don't really feel like I'm ever at a loss of some new thing to try.
Yeah.
I'm always got a long list of things I want to do, but it's generally that's true. I just kind of replace it with some other activity that still kind of can scratch the itch.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say it's not a loss. Like I really miss not being able to race cars. I love racing cars. It is just taking a car and putting it at its limit is, there's no other feeling like it. So I miss that. Now I test Tesla's autonomy software.
Yeah.
So it's still putting it at the limit, but it doesn't take the physical acumen that I used to have. Now it's more of a mental acumen of understanding what this new software is able to do and really being part of an entirely new generation. But that's hard. I really miss skiing. Mm. I really miss being high in the Alpine mountains, above the tree line. There's something magical about that cannot be replaced. Yeah. So I don't want to leave the impression that it's just easy to walk away, but psychologically you have to, right? Psychologically, you can't live in regret. You can't live in what was. You have to live where you are. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to live where I am and get as much out of that moment as I can, so that when I get to the next moment, I can't do it. I'm never saying, well, at least, I regret that I didn't do something that I wanted to do. So I'm always, for me, it's always about doing now, because I don't know if I can do it tomorrow.
Right.
And if I do it now and I can't do it tomorrow, well, I did it yesterday.
But so at least you did it.
At least I did it. Or at least I tried. Or at least I gave it a shot. And so that's been a motto of mine throughout. And that was a big reason I retired so early, was I was still able to walk. And my neurologist for a long time was a wonderful doctor named Catherine Wagner, who many of you may know. And I don't know, 10 years ago or so, I was talking with her at one of my appointments. And I said, well, all I want to be able to do is to retire while I can still walk. And at that point, I was still walking pretty well.
Yeah.
I said, I was about 10 years away. And she said, you'll be able to walk. And I wish I could tell her thank you. Maybe she'll see this.
Good advice.
Because she was right. I was able to walk. So I walked away from a really good and lucrative career. Because the last thing I wanted was to be sitting at some desk as I lost my ability to walk.
Right. Right.
I wanted to be able to get out and do this kind of road trip while I still had the ability to do it. And so that's So I've now done that. Well, this is yet the it's the longest one, but it is hopefully not the last. But it's also, I no longer have to think, well, I wish I had done that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it. And done it. I can still do more, but I no longer, I achieved that goal. I retired and was able to get out and do that big trip.
That's awesome. Achieve the dream that you set for yourself. You had a goal. You did it. A lot of people can say that they tried and maybe they only got so far. It seems like you achieved your goal. So is that kind of your final thought to the people before we let you go that are watching? Like, what would be your advice for them? Is it that? Is it just go for it? Is it a state of planning?
Yeah, I think so. I think what I had this really great professional development class once. And one of the sessions was about thinking about your future. And this instructor asked us to write down, what do you want to be doing a year from now? What do you want to be doing 5 years from now? And what do you want to be doing a decade from now? And each one of those gets more and more amorphous. But I recently found that sheet that I wrote down from that class way back in probably 2005 or something or earlier. And what was remarkable was how well I had actually followed that trajectory. And it's a really useful exercise because it helps you kind of think through what is it you would like to see. And then if you keep it in your mind, you can ask yourself each year along the way, did I achieve the 1 year goal? Is the 5 and 10 year goal still relevant to me? And if it is, am I moving in that direction? Am I putting the finances in place to make it happen? Am I making the career moves to make it happen? Am I, you know, building the skill sets to make it happen? Do I have the relationships to make it happen? And it can create this really wonderful grounding for you to stay a path and help you achieve what you want to achieve. And just sort of set near, mid, and longer term goals that you can kind of keep yourself accountable to.
Yeah.
And then go do it.
Right. Take it to action. That's awesome. Well, thanks, Don, for joining us, sharing so much information. If they want to follow you, or reach out to you, is there a way that the listeners, watchers can do that?
Sure. Well, you can always get me by email. I think that rather than just give my email here, since it'll be public, you can always get me through the FSHD Society. They'll put me in touch instantly. If you want to see me on Twitter and all my wonderful opinions, I'm Doyen Don on Twitter, DoyenDon. Doyen Don on Twitter.
Awesome. So follow Don. Great advice again. Great stories. Thanks, Don. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. That is Don Burke from Virginia area, originally from Minnesota, and just absolutely great stories. Great stories. Good times. And I didn't have to ask a lot of questions, right? The story is the podcast. That's what the beauty of this job is. So, you know, the takeaways from an episode like this to me are pretty obvious. Take the risk, but plan for them. We have to. And we have to plan more than most. Even how we carry about our morning, our day in our own home, right? You're thinking logically, how am I getting from here to here to here? Safely, how can I get that done? I know so many of you, including myself, if I'm on the floor, I'm like, okay, how am I getting up? So I don't know if I want to go down there, right? Or if I have to do a house project, how can I actually do that? Can I do that? I don't want to go too far where I need help. And if I do need help, I have to have my resources lined up to get that help quickly if need be. And that's exactly what I think Don Burke shared with us in this episode, is that yes, you can have these things. Yes, you can do these things. But if you have to understand and accept that there's some limitations, but that doesn't mean you completely say, let's not do it. I do like his adapt or let go but it's not let go like it's easy, or it's almost like a last resort in a way. Like, oh, I guess I got to let that go. It is heartbreaking that, you know, he can't ski now. He can't do the hiking that he used to. At least he experienced it. And I know he would agree with that. And I've been there too. I used to, and I hiked the Grand Canyon rim to rim. I hiked the Porcupine Mountains in Upper Michigan when I was younger. I, you know, played a ton of sports and ran. And, and that's the story for so many of you. I understand the frustration. But I like bringing in people like Don and others I have. But Don's like, you know, getting on the road trip and doing his thing and having fun. And we don't all live the life that Don may have, as in, you know, the freedoms, retired, et cetera. But you could do something like this in your lifestyle, if you're still working, if, you know, whatever your financial means is, but have an adventure. I remember telling my kids that when they were young. I would say, go outside and have an adventure. You know, go get dirty a little bit. Go run around. Go do something. And I think we have to take that advice too, even at our ages, whatever ages you are. Try to experience what you can. We adapt. We pre-plan maybe more than others. We make sure that we can not get in too much trouble and be able to get ourselves out of it. I know I can definitely envision when the bed's too low or when you can't get out of a chair even. I've had those moments. And even before I have the moment, like, okay, I just sat in a chair that's way too low. I don't know if I'm going to get out of this chair. And as I'm sitting in the chair, I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to get out of this chair? Or maybe I'm carrying on a conversation with people or this or that. They're not exactly close friends where they know what I have to deal with. So I'm like, this is going to be awkward, right? But I need to get out of this chair at some point. And then you kind of overcome that anxiety part and say, well, I just got to ask for help. And I think that's one of the great takeaways today too, is Don said, ask for help. You know, don't deny people the opportunity to help you is always great advice. Before I let everyone go, I know when this is, I'm sure this is not going to be always new news, but we've had a guest on in the past, Tony Teal, with his wife. And we've had them on episodes in the past. And they have been great guests on a couple episodes, with me, and this show, and, Jenny and, Tony Teal. And yesterday when I was, you know, looking through my social medias and whatnot, I found out that Tony Teal passed away, and he's been fighting illness. It sounded like almost a mystery illness, it appeared. I don't know the details, but I was heartbroken to see that. So in your time, if you know Jenny Teal, if you ever met that couple, if you followed them on YouTube, there were content creators on there. At least that's the legacy that they can leave to, or Tony can leave to. And they have three great kids too. So my prayers definitely deeply go to them and their family. So I want to take that moment to wish them well and know that I'm thinking about them. And I know our whole community is. So thanks for listening to this show. Visit fshdsociety.org to learn more and also to follow Don Burke. You also can follow the show, rate, review, please, if you can, and share it with your friends. You can find it on YouTube if you like watching in, or anywhere you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening to this episode of FSHD Straight Talk with your host, Tim. Thank you.